This is Bob Brumby in Manila. Another staggering blow has been dealt against Japan's stolen empire in the East Indies. Australian ground forces have made a third major landing on Borneo. More than several thousand Aussies hit the beach at Balik Papan at 8:05 Sunday morning. According to a communique issued by General MacArthur's headquarters, the speed, surprise, and shock of the three blows has secured domination of Borneo and driven a wedge south, splitting the East Indies. Balik Papan lies on the southeastern coast of Borneo. Balik Papan was a major source of oil and aviation gasoline for the Japanese. The Japs had at their disposal a total production of 15 million barrels per year. Under American engineering, the fabulous fields of Balik Papan are expected to yield a much richer supply of oil to feed ships and tanks and jeeps for the war in the Pacific. It is doubted that the Japs were able to obtain anywhere near the total production of the fields. Strategic Makassar Strait, gateway to the Flores and Java Seas, is now controlled by our safest craft, as well as by air and submarines. Development of already existing air facilities at Balik Papan will enable our aircraft of all categories to smash enemy communications on land and sea from Timor to southeastern Sumatra. The whole extent of Java and the important ports of Soros Baja and Batavia are now within easy flight range and subject to interdiction, according to the communique. General MacArthur was in personal command of the landing. He went ashore with a secondary wave of assault troops. After landing, General MacArthur said, "I think today we settled the score that Makassar Strait affair of 3.5 years ago." It might be recalled that between the 22nd and 24th of January in 1942, four of our destroyers, against tremendous odds, made a dashing but futile attack in an effort to stop Japanese invasion forces moving down the Makassar Strait. Sunday's landing was completed by the most intensive air and ship bombardment of any point attacked on Borneo. Participating in the softening up attack were the Royal Australian and Far Eastern Air Forces, and more than 300 warships of the United States 7th Fleet, Royal Australian and Royal Netherlands Navy. Light enemy fire was met by the safe landing party, but later in the morning, the left flank of our invading forces ran into heavy and accurate mortar fire. Mutual War correspondent Don Bell covered the landing and later will give a full eyewitness account of the staggering blow against the Japs.
Go ahead. 5 seconds.
Men of the 7th Fleet, United States Navy, who have been in on amphibious landings at Gloucester, Biak, Morotai, Leyte, Mindoro, and Luzon, say that in many ways this was the most difficult operation of them all. But the amphibious landing at Balikpapan in East Borneo has been made with complete success. The men of the 7th Australian Division have contacted the enemy beyond the beachheads, and the first phase of the operation that deprives the enemy of his previously stolen wealth of black gold in Borneo has been accomplished. After we returned from the beach at Balikpapan, Rear Admiral A.G. Noble of 4700 Connecticut Avenue, Washington, D.C., who is in charge of the amphibious operation, issued a statement which reads in part, "The assault phase of the amphibious operations against Jap-held Balikpapan was executed in accordance with plans despite determined opposition of the enemy and without casualty to the landing force." That is a part of Admiral Noble's official statement, which reads like an understatement, because the difficulties were enormous. In the first place, the enemy apparently knew our forces were preparing to land. The Jap radio said as much 10 days ago. The enemy twice attacked the fleet which was staging the amphibious assault. The enemy had placed large coastal defense guns in the area. He had placed and manned heavy dual-purpose guns pointing at the beaches. He had a great prize in the oil of Balikpapan, and he did his best to defend and protect that oil-rich area. The fact that our own mines had to be swept out of the waters of Balikpapan Bay did not make the task easier. Rear Admiral Ralph S. Riggs had brought an attack force into the waters off Balikpapan as early as the 16th of last month. minesweepers, naval fire to knock out coastal guns, and General Kenny had thrown the full resources of the 13th Air Force and heavies from the 5th Air Force into the preparatory beach cleaning operations. On the morning of D-Day, July 1st, everything was ready for the landing operation except the weather. The sea was rough and angry, made the landing extremely difficult. But in spite of the enemy and the weather, the landing was made according to schedule and without casualties. When we arrived on the beach at H+4 hour, tanks and artillery were already landed and in action, and supplies were coming ashore already. Our Navy guns were still sending salvos over our heads, still working on Jap gun emplacements in the hills beyond the beach. Jap howitzer was answering, sending a few shells harmlessly along an unoccupied part of the beach. Now and then we could hear the ping of a Jap sniper's rifle. Smoke was hanging heavy over the hills beyond the beach, some caused by our naval fire and airstrikes, some by the enemy who was burning what remained of the oil refineries and oil storage facilities in Ballycotton. Now and then a Jap anti-aircraft shell would burst in the sky above us. Spotter planes and land-based P-38s were having no difficulty because of the attack, however. A few fires were burning fiercely along the shore, but the Australian troops were simply disregarding those fires, going on about their business of securing the beach. Word was passed back along the line that the enemy had been contacted about 200 yards beyond where we were standing. I walked on up toward the beach, toward the front rather, came across the body of a dead Jap, watched souvenir hunters helping themselves to some Japanese cups, saucers, plates, and glasses, things from Tokyo which had never been unpacked. Then I walked back through half-burned piles of raw rubber, which had been stacked high along the beach, to await ships which had never come in to take the rubber to Japan. As we left the beach for our long flight back to Manila, we heard that the only casualties so far reported were from landmines, which the Aussies had run into about 200 yards beyond the beach. It is expected that the Aussies will have more difficulty in coming days, because Ballycotton is a rich prize. The enemy will fight to hold it. But already, as a result of having established beachheads, the enemy has lost all possibility of ever again using any of Ballycotton's yearly output of nearly 1 million tons of oil, oil which he cannot replace from any other source. The enemy is fast losing his stolen empire and his stolen riches. This is Don Bell reporting to you from Manila. I now return you to Mutual in the United States.